Here we go. We are up to part two. I believe the title was The Return, His Return to Greatness. And let's see. Let's see where the greatness brings us. So we left off last week on a cliffhanger. We left off, he just got out of jail. And not just jail. He got out of captivity and he actually was... We left off last week that he just got out of captivity. He was on death row. He survives. And here he is. Now, the one condition that the empire, the Austrian Empire, made with him was you may not be a Rav in our empire anyway. So there he was. He went, what's the expression? Lebira Mikta, may Igra Rama. Thank you. The expression of the Gemara, may Igra Rama. He was on this high, high plane to the lowest of the lowest. And he's now broke. He was very, very wealthy his whole life. He married well, like many of the Gedolim. Well being, his father-in-law supported him fully. And he also held a yeshiva, had many Rabbanus positions, and now he is less than nothing. So where does he go from there? He goes to the city of... He had a few cities. He went to the city of... Nemirov. Nemirov became famous. We're now in the year Shin Sadi Beis. We'll do this once a year. We'll just pick a year. Shin Sadi Beis. Anybody? Rabbi Klein's got this. Don't worry. There's always one guy to pick on. What? 1632. Shin Sadi Beis, 1632. Very good. 1632. He now finds himself in the city of Nemirov. Yeah? Anyone's been to Shari Chesed? There's a supermarket called Nemirov's. It's a city. Right. It's a city in Poland. He becomes the Rav of Nemirov. He's there for very, very short. He then goes to Ludmir. Ludmir is a city, Russia, Poland. And he was there for about 10 years. He was masaking many, many takanas. Many takanas while he was in Ludmir. One of them was he took a very big stand against talking. The coolest part about history is when you find out the issues that were plaguing the generations, and you're like, wow, no way, it's the same. What do you know? They talk about, the Natsmiya's clothing back in the 1500s. And you're like, oh, no way, they're still shrying about Natsmiya's today. And they're talking during davening, oh, what do you know? And they're going too slow in the yeshivas. It was the same fight between the Marshal and the Ramah. Oh, and they learned secular studies. The Ramah got beef for learning too much secular studies from his cousin, the Marshal. These things ain't chadash tachas hashemesh. These things are recurring points that just recur. And that's part of history. So, he shows up and he's making a takana. Now, we mentioned last week, there's a special tefillah. Tefillah of Tzitzis Yatzit. When do they say it? They say it right before Musaf. Is anyone familiar? We mentioned, you already heard last week that there's some tefillah. So here we go. The tefillah goes and says like this. It's the tefillah of the Tzitzis Yatzit. That's what they call it. So what does the Tzitzis Yatzit give you a bracha for? He gives you a bracha as follows. It should be here. It's not here. It didn't make it. It's a bold statement to leave it out. It's here. No, it's not. Okay. It was the proclamation for Bahab. That's what I thought was it, but no, that's not it. So most Siddurim, we're going to speak to Rabbi Slavitz. Most Siddurim have... Oh, his son, Mamali McClamer. Rabbi Sherman's alive and well. Should have Arichas Yam. So... The tefillah says that Hashem should give brachas to anyone who shomer piv not to speak during davening. Now they claim this is the Misha Berach of the Tosfos Yontif. Why? Because he created this tefillah. Now here's where it gets cool that he didn't make it at all. This tefillah already existed. It was actually penned by his Rebbe, the Maharal. The Maharal, besides being the Rav in Prague, he was the Rav in Nikolsburg for many, many years. For about 20 years. And he's known as the Maharal mi Prague. He was the Rav in Nikolsburg, and in Nikolsburg, these were the two things that we mentioned were the ills of that society, talking during davening and eating and drinking Sam Yenam. They had a lot of vineyards, and they drank Goyesha wine. And it was a big, big problem. You better believe it. So the Maharal was very, very disturbed by it. And as we mentioned last week, he took the positivity route of not screaming against those who did it, promoting, get a Misha Berach, and Hashem should shower you with bracha for keeping halacha. This is a very interesting chinuch discussion forming. Do you promote and give positive reinforcement for something that they're supposed to be doing? And the Maharal gives you brachas. So he made this Misha Berach for those who don't daven, who don't speak during davening. KTT, we don't need this Misha Berach, yeah? And then the Tosfos Yontif adapted it, and adapted it for his kehila in Ludmir, in Nemirov, and that's where the story, the folktale goes, that he said he only instituted it after Tach V'Tat, which was 1648-1649, Khmelnytsky, and all the terrible they went through Nemirov, and Rebbe Chiya Nemirov, who was killed, and it was pretty tragic. 2 million. I just recently heard this. The stats were 2 million Jews were killed over Tach V'Tat. They went for round three on 6 years later in Tuf Tesvav. That's when they hit Vilna. He went back for last licks. He rounded up everyone again and killed all the Jews of Vilna. And we're talking 25,000. The Shach wrote a sefer about the tragedies of Tach V'Tat. Anyone who was from the Gedolim was en route, running for their lives during Tach V'Tat. And after Tach V'Tat, Tosfos Yontif went and said, you have to institute the Misha Berach for those who don't speak during davening. And that's where it became famous, the Tosfos Yontif's Misha Berach for those who don't speak during davening. What was the story? There was a She'elas Cholom. She'elas Cholom is, you request, if anyone can perform this, please speak to me afterwards. I would love to find out who could do this. There was a She'elas Cholom that you request, you know, some sort of answers and some sort of connection. Please inform me, why did Tach V'Tat happen? Anyone who's looking to stop the talking in shul, this is definitely a place to start. The Tosfos Yontif was answered in a dream. It's because of talking during davening. Which is such a wild, wild answer. Which means you pick your tragedy of world scale and saying it was because of this. So what did Tosfos Yontif do? He instituted the Misha Berach. And that's how we have the Misha Berach on Tosfos Yontif. So what happens? Last week we left off that he made a fast day. What was the fast day? Hey, Thomas. For all the grandchildren. We have another one. For all the grandchildren. Myself included, because I married in. We're not sure. We're trying to figure it out. And the Tosfos Yontif spells it very clearly. On Hey, Thomas, you have to go and fast, because that was the day he was put on death row. And everyone needs to fast. Actually, there's a book they translate. I just saw this recently. Over the past week, I saw they translated the Megillas Eva. This is a show and tell from last week. Megillas Eva. This is not an autobiography. This anacle, he gets very, very bent out of shape inside. This is not a biographical sketch. Chas v'shalom. It's showing you the Nisim. And on the way, he throws in biographical tidbits. Whatever you want to call it. This is the Megillas Eva. And they actually translate into English. If anyone wants to find it, you could find it online. It's called The Feast and the Fast. Yeah. The Feast and the Fast, why? Because it really should be out of order. It's really, first came the fast, then came the feast. The fast was, anyone who's my grandchildren, offspring, and marries in for all generations has to fast on the day when I was put on death row. And then we get to the feast. That was the fast. When was the feast? It was, I believe it was, Let's see. I believe it was Rosh Chodesh Adar. Rosh Chodesh Adar, you have to make a seal. You have to make a seal, you have to make a suda. Why? Because that was the day he became the Rav in, by the Hasidim, they call it Krukut. Krakow was Ir Ve'Ein B'Yisrael, was one of the biggest, most prestigious cities in Poland. and he was finally got back to his gedula, put back on the pedestal for those last 10 years of his life. 10 years of his life, he was there from Tuf Dalid, 1644, that's an easier one, 1644 until 1654, he passed away at 79 years of age, which is a very long life for the mid-1500s to the mid-1600s. 79 years, he passed away in Tuf Yud Dalid. Now, where is he buried? He's buried in Krakow, and he's not with the other Gedolim. Who was in Krakow? Who were the Rabbanim of Krakow? So, just as an aside, who took him over? Anyone know? I just saw this past week. The Rebbe Reb Heschel. Who's the Rebbe Reb Heschel? No. The Rebbe Reb Heschel was the Rebbe of the Shach. There's very few people who get this prefix, the Rebbe Reb. We've mentioned this a few times. Reb Yonason Eibschitz is also referred to the Rebbe Reb Yonason. Why? There's some chashivas to it. It's the same reason why they say HaKadosh. Who are the HaKadoshes of Jewish history? The Archaim HaKadosh, the Shla HaKadosh, the Alshech HaKadosh, the Yid HaKadosh, Rashi HaKadosh, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. There's not more than 10, depending on which circles you come from. There's not more than 10, and it's definitely a sign and a title of chashivas. So, the Rebbe Reb Heschel was one of the biggest gedolim, hands down, of his generation. He was the Rebbe of the Shach, Rebbe of everyone. He was a counterpart with the Megine Shlomo, who was the grandfather of the Pnei Yeshua. The Pnei Yeshua was a Talmud, if I'm not mistaken, of the Rebbe Reb Heschel. We're not going to do a week on him, so I'll just tell you one cool thing. It's very odd that the Rebbe Reb Heschel has no svarim. The Chanukah Satera came out 150 years ago. The Chanukah Satera, yes, Rabbi Klein knows a lot. The Chanukah Satera was written 150 years ago. The Rebbe Reb Heschel, who was the Rebbe of the Shach, do the math, lived just about 400 years ago. So there are those who are not so pleased with who wrote the Chanukah Satera. Where did it go for 250 years? Which is definitely a question and a point to ponder. But the Rebbe Reb Heschel, there's some story that supposedly he got a klala. He got a klala that none of his svarim should be kept. They were all burnt, and that's why he's just a zecher. He's the Rebbe Reb Heschel, Rebbe of the Shach. The Shach quotes him a few times in Yerodea. My Rebbe, Reb Heschel of Krakow. So he took over for the Teis Yontif. Where's Teis Yontif buried? He's buried all the way at the end, not with any of his fellow Gedolim from his generation. The Bach was a counterpart. The Bach was in Krakow, as well as Brisk, as well as Belz. The Bach really made his rounds. Rabbanim at those times, they traveled the world. They were world travelers, going from one shteller to the next. And the Tosfos Yontif himself, he was in six different towns as the Rav of Bezdin, not the Rav, just part of the Bezdin. He was in Prague, Nemirov, Ludmir, Krakow, right? And there was one more. Okay, we have 6 minutes left. I want to get through a few of his farm. Wait. 3 points I want to get to. Number one, why was he all the way at the end of the cemetery? The story is told. It's something that rings a bell of a very famous story about Yesel the Miser, and supposedly happened with Teis Yontif. That he went and he used to give it to one of the wealthy people who didn't give money. Didn't give money for the causes, and he would give it to him and demand, you better come to Bezdin and you better bring your wallet and you better, and how dare you not bring and help the Kehila and help the Kupa of the Kehila as you could and as you should. And he never did, he never answered, and many people got very, very upset at Yossel the miser. He was the karger. Karger means the cheap one. In Yiddish, it sounds so derogatory. When you say karger, you just give those eyes. The cheapo. He was so miserly. What happened? This Yossela dies. If his name was Yossela, it doesn't matter. He dies, and the other people who would give money towards the community funds and community functions stopped giving money. So the Teis Yontif calls them in and says, what's going on? You better cough up some money. Krakow needs your tzedakah. And they said, our funder has passed on. And the Teis Yontif was so moved, said, I want to be buried next to him. So, supposedly, You can confirm? Next to the Tosfos Yontif. Kever, I've yet to meet in Krakow. We hope to take a koilel trip. Here it is, mentioned for the first time tonight. So, Krakow, over there, next to the Tosfos Yontif, there's a kever that supposedly was of this non-Baltzaka Baltzaka.
So that's not the story that you could possibly want to be told.
Correct. So Rav Shlomo Kalbach says the story about it. So there's nuance, there's differences. Yeah. So.
But it's the name's the
rabbi. Oh really? Yeah. So get me the name. We'll compare. We'll compare the details. See if it works out. So what are his svarim? And I want to share with you one vart from Tosfos Yontif, or two. Let's see what we have. Some of his svarim are he really spanned the gamut. He writes that he wrote. He used to be a chabura when he was a bacher. He was a young budding talmid chacham. He used to learn Rabbeinu Bachaye. How cool! Rabbeinu Bachaye. That was what they learned. They learned Rabbeinu Bachaye. And he wrote a sefer on Rabbeinu Bachaye. Tosfos Yontif has a sefer on Rabbeinu Bachaye. He also wrote on the Rush. Many Mesechtas and Shas have a pirush from Tosfos Yontif. Some of them have different names depending on the Mesechta. A pirush on the Rush, which was one of the foremost Ashkenazi Sephardi poiskim. When we get to the Rush, we'll talk about him. He was from Germany, Talmud of the Mamre Yotenberg, who moved to Spain. Met the Rajbo. You know, go figure. So, he wrote a pirush on many of the Rush and many Mesechtas. He also wrote a pirush on the Levush. The Levush, or Mordechai Yafo, big Talmud of the Ramah. He wrote a pirush on him, basically disagreeing with him whenever he pipes up. But he was Tosfos Yontif, he can do whatever he wants. And he also wrote, what else did he write? Tosfos Yontif. We explained last time why he calls it Tosfos Yontif. It's going to expound on the Mishnayos in a Tosfos manner, just like Tosfos expounds on the Gemaras. Share with you, and then what else do we have? Any other svarim? Oh, Madani Melech, the one that had to get changed in the libel that they put against him. They said, look, he's mocking you, king, because look at his sefer. He calls it the treats and the Madanim of the Melech. He views himself as the Melech. So they switched that. Now it's called Madani Yontif. Because after it got reprinted, after it got put into death row, they switched the name. And let's share one vart. There's a few more svarim. I didn't get to every single one. I'll share with you one vart. The Mishnah and Novice goes and says that don't do it for the prize. Don't go and serve. Don't go and serve the Creator for the prize. Rather, the Tosfos Yontif goes and says right then and there. Check it out. On that Mishnah and Novice, he says that the alternative, the ideal is don't do it for the price. Right? You should be Havadim Hamshamshan Asarav, that you serve the master. Shalom Anasa Kalapras, not for any incentive. What do we call the people who do it for the incentive? We still refer to them as Havadim. Because it's still a service. Even if you're doing it not for 100% lishma reasons, you're still in heaven. There's still that value to your actions. Because you're still serving Hashem. So we should all be able to take what we can, be the best avodim we can, and glean so many things and glean greatness and steadfastness from the Tosfos Yontif, not losing himself in despair, getting back up, making that Suda, and until next week.